has worked primarily with children up to the age of 12 years old, so from 0 to 12. But one of the great things which is which we're starting to look into is working with care leavers. So there's some serious studies and research which shows that care leavers are really vulnerable. If you don't know what a care leaver is, really simply, it's someone that are between 16 and 18 and they've been in the care system, and it's when they're almost like let loose and they're in the world by themselves. And these guys are so super vulnerable, and they often can fall into the exact same cycle as what they were with their kids. They often find themselves having children quite young, and the cycle just kind of starts again. And so for Safe Families, we've started to talk to Nottingham and in fact to Derby, and it's going across the whole of the UK to say, what would it look like for us to support these guys? Because really the heart of Safe Families is to get involved with people as early as possible, before the crisis has become such a point where emergency measures have to be taken. We want to get involved before that point. And so we're asking, what would it look like for Safe Families to get involved with these 16 to 18, 16 to 20-year-olds, and just bring a little bit of support? And Safe Families is actually, it's not just an organisation I work for, a charity I work for, it's actually something which is really dear to me. You see, when I was growing up, my parents are pastors in North Wales, but my little sister died. And my family was left obviously devastated, and my parents couldn't cope. Like, they didn't know how to be with each other, they didn't know how to look after us. And there was a crisis point. Does that make sense? There was a point of crisis. And what it needed, that point of crisis, was for my grandparents to move into the family home and for the people in the church to bring us dinner pretty much every night for months. And for when we got in from school, because there was a sense of community and we knew our neighbours, and it would be my parents or my grandparents would be like, I mean, I'm one of five, so it was quite a significant thing for my parents. But so yeah, they would just palm us off, I guess, to our neighbours. But there's a real sense of community. And one of the things which I've seen and noticed in our society is that this sense of community has really broken down. That so many people are living isolated, in isolated situations by themselves. And if we're honest, every single person here and every single family faces moments of crisis. That happens to all of us. And what gets us through that are the people in our lives and the people around us. And they bring resilience and support and practical help. And for so many of the families we work with, there is nothing. And that's not an exaggeration. There is no support. So for Daphne, she came to the UK and she had no support. And without the introduction of Safe Families, and when I say Safe Families, I mean one of the churches in Derby, her situation would have been massively different. She would have been left, as I say, her kid would have been taken away from her. That's what was happening. And Safe Families got involved. And through Helen, the volunteer, Helen introduced Daphne into church. Daphne started going to church. She made a commitment to Jesus. She's now serving in the kids' team at church. And more than that, she's like, oh, Safe Families helped me. Maybe I could become a Safe Families volunteer. So she's actually now volunteering with us, and she's supporting other people. And it's really that simple, the work of Safe Families. And yeah, like, there are so many people. I've already mentioned this figure, 615. There are so many families in Nottingham who might have been going through something like what happened to my family, or maybe something like something more similar to Daphne's. But what I'm here to say is that we as the Church of Jesus Christ can affect the outcomes for these families. We have a responsibility and an opportunity and a privilege to affect the outcomes for these families. But I'm going to invite Beth up. Beth volunteers with us, and I just want her to share a little bit of her story, and yeah.
So we started volunteering for Safe Families for Children after someone came to the church and invited us to an information evening. I went along with my husband, and at the time I thought, this is going to be something I'm going to do on my own. But we just got a real blessing that God really blessed us with a 3-bedroom house, and we've got 2 spare rooms with 3 beds. Again, which were donated by people in the church. And we just thought, well, we need to do this for God. Jono again sat with me and was like, I really want to be a host family. And I was like, where's that coming from? So yes, we signed up to be a host family, a befriender, and the resource friend. We've helped 9 children through Safe Families for Children, 2 due to mum going into hospital for operations or pregnancy, and 1 due to mental health. And yeah, I think the families have really been blessed by Safe Families for Children.
Phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And I think one of the things which Beth would say, I hope anyway, is that often the support which both her and Jono have given has been actually relatively simple. It hasn't been that complicated. It's really just people being family and community. We don't need all of these experts coming in. The families who are supported have enough of those. They just need people who are friendly and kind and compassionate and who will be a listening ear. I'm finishing, and I guess I've taken enough of your time. Thank you. But I want to leave us with this: like, what is our response to vulnerable families as the church? The Bible, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because it doesn't really give us room to escape, is pretty clear that we have a responsibility towards the widow and the orphan. It talks about that in James chapter 1. And I'm not necessarily saying, I'm not looking around here and saying that every single person has to sign up to Safe Families today, or every single person has to start fostering, or every single person has to adopt. But I'm saying, what is our responsibility? What is your responsibility? We all have an individual responsibility as the church to these families. It might be that you say, oh, I could give 2 hours every other week to support a family. Or it might be, I know there are foster carers in this church. I could maybe support some of those guys. Maybe I can, when they've got new children in, maybe I can bake some cakes or make some meals, or maybe I can get even approved to be a respite carer so the foster mom or foster dad can have a little bit of a break. Or maybe it is that you become a foster carer. But one of the things I wanted to say as I am just about to hand back is we can all pray. Like, that is one thing which we can all do, and we all have a responsibility to pray for these vulnerable families. Awesome. I am going to hand back. Thanks, Eric. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you, Beth, as well. And this year, you know, that our theme for this year is Year of Transformation. And actually what we've been talking about and hearing about this morning is so, so relevant and important because, you know, we believe that Jesus transforms us. But if we don't be part of the transformation that our world needs because of Jesus, then something is seriously wrong. And it's just so encouraging and inspiring and challenging to see that in action and to challenge ourselves with how can we get involved in not just allowing transformation in us, but being part of the solution to transforming the world because of Jesus in us. So I'm really excited this morning to be carrying on our little mini topic on Meet Jesus, Be Transformed. And we're looking at some of Mark's gospel and looking at some people who spent time with Jesus and got transformed. And our experience and our experience of seeing how other people spend time with Jesus is that if you have an encounter with Jesus, then you will be transformed. So let's have a look at Mark chapter 1. It will come up on the screen if you've not got Bibles, but if you have, Mark chapter 1 from verse 35 says this: Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, Everyone is looking for you. Jesus replied, Well, let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come. So he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, If you are willing, you can make me clean. Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. "See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. Quite a short passage, but there is quite a lot in there for us this morning. Now, I don't know about you, but have you been enjoying the relatively good weather this week? Yes, it's been good, hasn't it? Summer has arrived. I know that summer has arrived because, for those of you who don't know, I'm a farmer, and part of my job involves going all around the county shearing other people's sheep as well as my own. But this week, I thought I'm going to get my own sheep sheared out of the way, and so I can concentrate on everybody else's. Now, anybody sheared a sheep here before? Anybody familiar with that? No, not many of you. If you ever do get the chance to do it, you will get incredibly mucky and dirty. It is quite a filthy job. Now, I've been married enough to know what I can get away with how dirty I can come indoors with and not. So I just know that if I'm shearing my own sheep, then my lunchtime is going to be out in the garden, because I will not be allowed in the kitchen. I mean, the great thing is that Esther doesn't really like me handling food either, so I usually get my lunch made for me as well, which is absolutely brilliant. So we were sat out in the garden earlier this week, and I was tucking in, you know, not too bothered about how dirty I was. And Esther said, "Oh, I can't even look at you." Now, Esther doesn't really, there's certain things that Esther doesn't do too well without feeling a little bit sick. And I said, what? Thinking, come on, you've seen me, this dirty. She said, "Oh, look at your top." And the last sheep that I'd sheared before I packed up for dinner had snotted all down my top. So I had this great big long stringy thing. Like, sorry, darling, am I making you gag? And I thought, well, I'm not wiping it off because I'm going to get it all over my hands. So I just thought, well, I can't see it. But sometimes we can find ourselves in scenarios where certain people we don't feel terribly comfortable around. Do you know what I mean? I mean, when I'm working, usually, I know that I'm dirty when I'm shearing sheep, but usually when I'm farming, I feel relatively clean until I pop down to the shop to post something or to pick something up, and then I'm slightly aware that people are looking at me and not feeling so terribly comfortable. And I'm suddenly aware that that I'm not as clean as I perhaps thought I was. And actually, that makes me feel a little bit different about myself. When you suddenly pick up on somebody else's revulsion of you, you kind of feel a little bit like you want to withdraw yourself. And in this passage this morning, we see this multiplied so many times on so many different levels with this poor guy who's got leprosy. And in this passage, it's one of those passages where, you know, they will make a statement and the knowledge is assumed that we know the severity of it. It says, "There was a man with leprosy." Now, we may or may not have a great deal of understanding of leprosy as a condition, but back then, everybody knew what leprosy was, because leprosy was a disease that was incredibly feared. It would have been like, I guess, when the plague was around, you know, people would have lived in absolute fear. You know, every time there was any slight ailment, people would be going, "Oh no, is this it? Is this it?" But it was a disease that was incredibly, incredibly feared. Its modern day name for it is Hansen's disease. Thankfully, it is a relatively curable disease now, but back then it wasn't curable, and until they could find a cure, it remained an incredibly infectious disease. And so they had good reason to be fearful. But it was a disease that affected the whole body. And what would start as fatigue and sort of general pain in joints and things would fairly rapidly turn into other things with other ailments. They would get scaly spots over their body that would then become quite pus-filled and horrible. And due to nerve damage, their appearance would actually change. So somebody's face would look very different to what it used to look like before they became ill. As it progressed, their voice would change because nodules would grow on their voice cords. And so they would start to speak with quite a raspy voice that didn't sound too great. And one of the worst things about the disease was that the body started to become a living decomposition. The body would be kind of decomposing as different bits of infection took over. And so for somebody with leprosy, going through all of that, they would also be preceded and proceeded by the most awful stench as their body succumbed to the infection. One of the things that was particularly awful about the disease was because it attacked the nervous system, they would get to a point where they wouldn't actually feel pain. And so if they were near something too hot, they could quite easily burn themselves without realizing what was going on. And they would have just horrendous accidents. One of the horrible things was as well was because of the smell, they would actually attract the rats. And so while they were asleep, they would be unaware that rats would be gnawing on them. And it was an absolutely horrible disease. And when we read they had leprosy, we perhaps don't really realize the full impact of what that meant. It was a disease that could last up to about 9 years. They would have limbs that would just simply drop off, and they would eventually die a horrible, horrible death. Now, I don't know what you're like when you're around ill people. You know when somebody's got a really bad cold and you're feeling quite healthy? You know, you're like, hello. Yeah, nice to see you. Or if they've got a sick bug. You know, if somebody's had a sick bug and you're like, I'm not really sure if you're still infectious or not. But you start to behave a bit differently. So, you know, I mean, if I was here in my shearing stuff and I'd got snot and poo and all the rest of it over it, and sheep stuff as well. That's Jake's brother. And if I said to you, do you know, I've had the most dreadful, dreadful cough this week and cold. But it's really, really nice to be with you. I think I'm okay. You know, you perhaps might not really feel too happy about me getting too near, would you? You know, and so with this whole leprosy thing, I mean, if you can just imagine the fear that people would have knowing that somebody had that scale of a disease and the impact that it would have, it becomes no surprise that people with leprosy were shut out of society. And that's basically what happened. They were sent out and lived in colonies. It was basically a death sentence. You know, they were sent away to preserve the rest of the population from dying a horrible death. In fact, they if they did encounter anybody, they were obliged to shout, unclean, unclean, so that from over there you would know to avoid them. They also had to rip their clothes, so it made it completely obvious that they had this disease. They actually lived a complete life of shame. You know, to have, I mean, if you could put yourself in that position, to have not only to have a horrible, horrible, horrible disease, but also the shame of it. And for people who had leprosy, they were often seen as sinful people because this was a punishment that had been put on them by God. It actually wasn't, but that was how it was seen. They also made other people unclean too. So if you came into contact with somebody who had leprosy, that would make you ceremonially unclean, and you would have to perform a ritual at the temple with the priest to make yourself clean so that you could be acceptable to God. So it was a massive, massive deal. And if you had a relative or somebody who had this condition and you sent them away, it was almost like they had died a death. You know, you've said goodbye to them, they're gone, you're never going to see them again, and it was very final, unless you were the person who was suffering. So that's really the background of where this is coming from, where at this point that we pick up. You know, this is what the man is living. He is living a life of shame, of pain, a desperate life that's got no real hope for the future. But there's a few fantastic things that we can draw out of this passage this morning that are really helpful for us, that show us something about the man and about how he coped and what he wanted to do about it, but also about the character and person of Jesus and how he meets us on a day-to-day basis. So I just want us to have a look at that for a few minutes. First of all, the man, he didn't come and say, "Jesus, I want you to heal me. I want you to take this condition away." He actually said, "I want to be made clean. I want to be made clean. I want to be in a place where inside I am acceptable to you, God. I want to be acceptable." And he recognized that being right on the inside was the thing that made the difference and was the thing that impacted the rest of the outside. And, you know, we cope so much better with what life throws against us and at us if our inner self is in a position of strength and that we're right with God. And he recognized something. He recognized that here is a man who can actually do something about my inner self. And that is the most important thing. Whatever happens to me physically, I want to know that on the inside, I am right with God. You know, the devil will always attack our minds. He will use what's around us, but it's in our minds that we get attacked. You know, we've been praying this morning for our dear friends who've got physical things that they need a touch from God from. But you know, Claire is going to conquer this thing, not because the thing is going to get you, but from your inner strength. You know, we've been praying joy over you this morning, and you know that inner strength is not going to rock you because you've got that thing right. And you know, if we're right on the inside, you know, we can be overcomers of whatever is happening in the physical. But the devil will always try and attack that and will always try and pull away at that and corrode that. And this man recognized that in order to cope and in order to get through, I need to be right with God. I need to be clean before him. But he also recognized the authority of Jesus. He recognized that if Jesus was willing, then there would be a change. And that this, for him, was to be a real God moment. He knew that if he could get a change, if he was going to see a change in his life, there needed to be a God moment. And that God moment would only happen when he made contact with Jesus, put himself before him and said, "Look, here I am. If you are willing, you can do this thing." In other words, I'm here. I recognize your authority. I'm coming under it. And whatever you say, here I am. I'm yours. And you know, we need to be people who do about our situation. You know, we need to do something about our state and our place and our position. And, you know, we need to be not people who just sit and wait. You know, there was plenty of people that Jesus would have come past, but this man sought him out against the odds. You know, he wasn't even allowed to do this. This went against the law of the land. You know, you've got leprosy. You're not allowed to come into physical contact with people. You're not allowed to come into crowded areas. But this man did something about that. He didn't just accept his circumstances. He didn't just wait for other people to sort it out for him. He took responsibility for where he was at, and he came. He did. And you know, we need to be people who don't play the victim. We need to be people who are prepared to do and to be active and proactive about our relationships with Jesus and about putting ourselves in the right place. And the right place is putting ourselves under the authority of Jesus. Because actually we can't do the complete work in ourselves, can we? But we need to put ourselves in a place where Jesus can do it. What I love is what we see about the person and character of Jesus in all of this. So what Jesus did next was truly unconventional and utterly amazing. The bits of verse before where his disciples are going, oh, he's got up early. Now where's he gone? He's always wandering off. What's he doing? Jesus, if when we're reading that in those passages, he came with a purpose. He was on a mission. You know, he was here for a reason. And this wasn't one of those moments of, oh, that's nice. I've just bumped into somebody. Oh, I could sort that out. No, he was here for a reason. He was here to bring people back into relationship with him. He was here to readdress the mess that we'd made of life and the distance that we'd put with God, and to put things right. And so it wasn't a difficult thing for him. He was here to change lives. And so here was a man who had come to him to have his life changed. And Jesus, in all of that, even though he was here for a purpose, he didn't go, oh, well, yeah, you know, that's my job. Of course I'll do it. That's what I'm here for. Even in all of that, he is filled with compassion. I love that. Absolutely love that. You know, here's this horrendous man. He stinks. He's a mess. He looks awful. He's a man who's got the potential to cause an awful lot of trouble by spreading a disease and causing trouble with the authorities. And yet, Jesus sees him, sees his heart, and it just beats with love. He looks at this man and he is filled with compassion. And I love that because I know that when I come to Jesus, he is filled with compassion and love for me. And it's that that drives him. It's that that motivates him to do the change of transformation in me. But if you can imagine what was going on around in the crowd, as the man, as he comes to Jesus, I bet everybody, like this picture, they're probably all recoiling, going, whoa, you know, stay away. Jesus just goes right up to him and touches him. You know, this it's unthinkable. Absolutely unthinkable that anybody should do that. But he places his hand, he might even have just put his arm around him, I don't know, but he touches him. I don't know about you, but I know that if somebody in authority, particularly when I was younger, or people that I highly regard or respect, put their hand on my shoulder and say, oh, brilliant, that was amazing, or how are you doing? Even that sort of physical identifying with me actually is quite powerful. But when Jesus did that to the man, I mean, I bet he was surprised as well. But he touches the man. He meets him right where he's at. And he says, I am willing. I am willing. Sometimes we can get ourselves into a place in our minds where we're not really sure if Jesus is really willing to sort the mess out that's in our lives. Or we're not really sure if, you know, we're important enough. You know, we kind of know that he'll do it because he's perhaps might feel like, well, perhaps he's got to do it because it says so in the Bible. He's got to sort us out. But, you know, there's far more people he'll think far more importantly of. And this is a good reminder this morning that whoever we are, when we come to Jesus and say, here I am, I'm here, if you are willing, then I can tell you this, he is. His heart absolutely beats with so much love and compassion for each and every one of us, no matter what our background is, no matter what we think that we've done that might discredit us. He is saying to us this morning, I am so willing. I am so, you know, the novelty hasn't worn off for me, guys. It really hasn't. You know, I didn't use it all up on the man with leprosy. I really, really love you. And I really want to identify with you. You've just got to step up. And the great thing is that he actually healed the man as well. You know, and it was, and that would have been incredible because that would have been an instant thing. You know, that stench would have gone, limbs might have grown back. Whatever state he was in, it was reversed. When somebody has an encounter with Jesus, there can't help but be a change and a transformation. And when we come to Jesus with willing hearts, let's have the faith to really know that Jesus is working in us and wants to work in us and is so for us. It's an interesting bit of postscript. You know, he does this great big miracle and then half of it's sort of devoted to the fact that Jesus said, look, don't go off spreading the news about me. I want you to go to the priests and you know, and do your ceremonial thing and get yourself clean and all that. And I must admit that over the years when I've read it, I've thought, what? No, go on, tell everybody. This is amazing, which is obviously what the man did. But the significance of that is that in order to be accepted back into the community of people, he needed to be declared clean by the priests. And if he had actually done that, they would have been able to see something more of who Jesus was and potentially have had a bigger impact. Because you see, in that day, in that time, they were all looking for the Messiah. They all were expecting the Messiah to come. And the things that Jesus did, if they had actually looked at the things that he did, they would have seen that he was displaying the signs that proved who he was. Isaiah 61, and I'm going to read it, and I want us just to reflect a little bit on this, because this is a passage where all about the coming of the Messiah, and it has in it some of the signs that people were to expect to see to prove that Jesus was the Messiah, the one that was to come. But it also has an awful lot in it that we can relate to, because it talks about some of the transformation that we would expect to see in ourselves as a result of the work of Jesus. So this is Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me. This is now Jesus saying this, and if you can imagine that, you know, it wasn't Jesus who wrote this in the first place, but this is Jesus. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. That was a good news day, wasn't it, for the leper? That was a good news day. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all those who mourn, and to provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty. I hope you're getting this. You know, grab this for yourselves. You know, all these things that I'm reading, just go, yeah, this is actually me that this is talking about. The oil of gladness instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. They will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They might have been talking about a physical place there, but actually we can metaphorically take that, you know? If you're in a place this morning where you feel inside, you know, your inner spirit, the one that really connects with the Lord, if you feel that you might be a bit like an ancient ruin, this is for you. They will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities that have been devastated for generations. Aliens will shepherd your flocks. Foreigners will work your fields and vineyards. And you will be called priests of the Lord. You will be named ministers of our God. You will feed on the wealth of nations, and in their riches you will boast. Instead of their shame. Shame is a horrible thing, isn't it? You know, we can allow ourselves to be in a place of shame, like the leper who lived a life of shame. And if that's you this morning, if you're quietly nursing shame, maybe you've never told anyone about it, maybe maybe it's your private thing that's just holding you back, but actually you feel shame. Instead of their shame, my people will receive a double portion. And instead of disgrace, they will rejoice in their inheritance. We have a fantastic inheritance, guys. Jesus has done so much for us. And so they will inherit a double portion in their land, and everlasting joy will be theirs. For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery and iniquity. In my faithfulness, I will reward them and make an everlasting covenant with them. Their descendants will be known among the nations and their offspring among the peoples. We're significant people. You know, we're significant. All who see them will acknowledge that they are a people the Lord has blessed. I delight greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in my God. For he has clothed me with garments of salvation and arrayed me in a robe of righteousness. As a bridegroom adorns his head like a priest, and as a bride adorns herself like with her jewels. For as the soil makes the sprout come up, you might not like sprouts. That's not what it means. It's okay. And a garden causes seeds to grow. So the sovereign Lord will make righteousness and praise spring up before the nations. In the New Testament, this Jesus who fulfilled the prophetic that's in this passage, that I've not done justice with pulling apart because we haven't got time this morning. This Jesus encountered many, many, many people. And what we see is that those people who encountered Jesus were transformed because of those things. He changed them from a state of despair and shame and hopelessness into people with purpose, people of status, people who became children, sons, daughters of the living God. The leper was an outcast. But at the touch of Jesus, not only was he made whole inside, it had an impact on the physical world around him. And I want us to make our own response to the Lord this morning. And it'd be good, actually, if you're able to stand, stretch your legs a little bit. And maybe for you this morning, there are things that the Holy Spirit has just touched on that he's just showing you that actually you don't need to be carrying certain things. Maybe you've known him for a long time, but actually you feel shame. Maybe you feel that you're not quite right with him. Maybe you feel there's things holding you back. And the formula is so simple. It is so simple. We need to do so that he can do even better and bigger. And if we put ourselves in a place where we're saying, Lord, this is me. Here I am. If you're willing. And when we say if we're willing, we need to know that his answer is, yes, I am willing. And so if you need to do stuff with the Holy Spirit this morning, we're just going to worship for a moment before we wrap up. But just use that time to realign your spirit, confess what you need to confess, but do it from a place of knowing that when we come to Jesus, he will meet us where we're at. He will touch us where we're at. You know, you might not feel lovely. You might not feel acceptable. But this is the day of transformation. This is the day where we can be transformed. And if you this morning have never known what it's like to be in relationship with Jesus, it's also just so simple. Because if you put yourself in a place where you say, Lord, I'm here. I not only want you in my life, but I want you to forgive me for my old way of life. And I'm making you Lord of a new life. I accept you, Jesus. If you've never been in that place where you've had a relationship with Jesus, then if you just pray a simple prayer like that, it's as simple as that. And you will start to experience the transforming work of Jesus.